Welcome back to the 9 Deadliest Sins of Communication with your host, Ronnie Moore. On this side, we will investigate two common communication sins, the charging rhino, as well as the often confusing communication style we've identified as mixed messages. Communication is a gift. However, some of us are so intent on the giving that we fail to acknowledge the interest and needs of the receiver. Let's return to the Net.net Internet Company, as Bob, a well-meaning supervisor, gives Catherine a crash course on a new piece of software. Bob models the communication sin we've aptly titled, The Charging Rhino.
Okay, the first step is to install the installation disk.
That's already taken care of that.
Looks like that's already been done. Okay, the next step is to go ahead and start the program.
Yes, I've taken care of that
so
as well.
I'll just go ahead and take the mouse and start the program here for you.
Okay.
Looks like that's already going. Okay, let's say, for instance, we want to merge two files. A letter and a list of names and addresses.
Like the vendor files that I do every Thursday.
Exactly, like the vendor files, only we like to keep the list of names and addresses in a separate file. So go ahead and type in the letter. After the letter's typed, well, then you just press in the merge code and the program automatically merges everything together.
Yeah, I've been doing that very same thing for the past year now.
But not with the same software.
Well, no, not with this particular update.
Well, see, because this software has a lot of new features. For instance, let's say that you've saved a file, but you don't remember how you saved it or where. All you have to do to find it is press
F4.
Let's say then, for instance, that you're going to search for a word or a phrase and make some changes. All you have to do there is press
Shift F4. Bob, I've used those particular codes.
Great.
Those are not the ones that I really
Let me show you how to check your spelling. What you want to do is you want to highlight word or words, and then go up here to the Tools menu. And
throughout all this, Bob is totally oblivious to Catherine's nonverbal signals of frustration, annoyance, and "You're wasting my time, Bob." She obviously knows everything but the update, but she's dealing with a charging rhino. The charging rhino depersonalizes his or her listener. The rhino's listener is there only to take in the signal, whether the listener already knows it, whether the listener has time for it, whether the listener needs it or wants it. The listener's knowledge, needs, and time are almost irrelevant because the charging rhino does not deviate from his or her plan. The charging rhino often has an internal tape that must be played from beginning to end. The charging rhino just keeps coming at you. Again, whether the listener needs it, knows it, or wants it, that tape will be played from beginning to end. The charging rhino is generally oblivious to the listener. The rhino ignores or doesn't see indications of confusion, existing knowledge, or disagreement. The charging rhino keeps charging, whether the listener understands, needs explanation, or is not agreeing with what's being said. The charging rhino is speaker-centered, not listener-centered. The rhino's tape must be played from beginning to end. This is true even when the charging rhino is trying to be helpful, as Bob was when trying to help Catherine with the software. What do you do when a charging rhino is coming at you? How do you stop the stampede? One way, of course, is to master the skills of interruption. Remember that subtlety is lost on the charging rhino. Often when we try to be very calm and quiet, "Excuse me," or we clear our throat, or we look casually at our watch, hoping that the charging rhino will get the hint. Understand that generally with the charging rhino, this kind of subtlety does not work, because the rhino is not focusing on you. The rhino is busy charging. So we need to kind of turn up our volume when we're being stampeded. We have to forget about subtlety and clearing the throat, or gently looking at the watch, or dropping hints, because the hints are not being heard. Often we have to forget that subtlety and hold up our hand almost like a police officer and say, "Stop!" It doesn't mean we're unkind or we're nasty. It simply means that if we don't stop the charging rhino surely is not going to do it. Let's revisit Catherine and her boss, Bob, the charging rhino. Let's see how she manages to stop his stampede.
Okay, another neat feature is the send menu. Mm-hmm. Let's say that you want to email this document to somebody. What you want to do is you want to go up here to the edit menu. Oh,
it's in the file menu. Now,
let's check the format menu.
Here it
is in the file menu. Now, faxing from the computer is almost exactly the same thing. All you need to
Bob, I haven't had any problem in the old version trying to fax, but in this new one, I don't know where the commands are.
Have to save your document as you normally would, and you want to make sure that it's saved properly, because if you don't save your document, well, it could be gone in cyberspace.
Stop.
What?
Stop. Listen, Bob, I really appreciate your taking the time to show me this new version, but what I've been trying to tell you is that I'm very well versed in 3.5. If you want to help me, show me the new features in 4.0.
You know 3.5?
Yes, I do.
Oh, well, why didn't you say so?
I did.
You did?
Yes, I did, several times, but you just kept charging.
Charging?
Charging.
Well, I'm sorry, I was just trying to explain. Sorry.
No problem.
Well, if you know 3.5, this is basically the same thing. They're laid out very similar, but like you said, with just a few changes. You were saying you had some trouble faxing.
Yeah, well, like, it used to be in the utilities menu, but now it doesn't seem to be there, and I can't find it anywhere.
Okay, that is one of the changes. What they've done is they've now put it under the print command. Let's take a look at that.
As you just saw, dealing with a charging rhino means forgetting about subtlety. It often takes a clear, direct action to stop the charge. This time, Catherine deals more effectively with Bob by holding up her hand and saying, "Stop." Although she politely thanked Bob for his good intentions and for his time, she firmly made it clear that she knew the software pretty well. She simply needed information about the newest version. By firmly stopping the stampede, Catherine got Bob moving on track past the information she already knew and therefore didn't need explained. She's helped both herself and Bob by saving them both time. Now, think about, what if this is me? Don't be a charging rhino. Assess your listener's level of knowledge before you start communicating. If you're giving instructions or you're explaining a situation or you're giving a status report on a project, find out what your listener already knows, what your listener needs, and be prepared to adjust your communication, your presentation, your content accordingly. An analogy would be if you think about the old record albums with 5 or 6 cuts or songs on each side, and the old phonograph needles that would play the record, the music on the record. Well, charging rhinos must play that record from the first cut to the end, until there's no more music. When we stop charging, when we try not to charge, we realize that even if we had planned to start at the first cut, at the first piece of music, if the listener doesn't have time for that piece, or doesn't need to know that piece, we may have to be prepared to pick up our needle and put it down on the second or third song, even though we had planned to start on the first song. Conversely, if we had felt that the listener already knew some things that the listener doesn't know or needs to hear again, and we had originally planned to start on the third or fourth cut, we might have to say, "No, I'm going to pick up my needle and go all the way back to the first cut," because that's what listener or receiver-centered communication is. It's talking or communicating based on what the listener needs, wants, and has to do, not just on what we want to say or what we've planned to say. That's one critical way that we stop our own charge. Check ongoing understanding throughout your communication. Look at the nonverbal cues that you're receiving. Are people rolling their eyes when you're talking? Are people looking confused? Are they disagreeing? Are they checking their watches? Are they looking elsewhere? Are you getting nonverbal cues even if people are too polite or are unable to tell you that you're charging or don't feel that they can or should put up a hand to stop you? Are you getting nonverbal indicators that you're charging? And if so, think about that and stop and ask, "Am I going too fast? Am I losing you? Do you have time for this?" One of the things that's very important that often we forget is when we telephone people who are not expecting us, the first thing we should ask is, "I need about 10 minutes or 15 minutes. Do you have the time? Is this a good time?" Before we say, "Hello, how are you?" and start charging through the communication without thinking that maybe this person doesn't have the time or the wherewithal to deal with your call right now. And again, if you remember the appointment mentality when we talked about the do not disturb communicator, often we have to pick up the phone and just take a chance that the person is there. But that doesn't mean we start our charge without assessing not only previous knowledge, but time. Does the listener have the time? Again, in face-to-face communication, look for those nonverbal cues. Is your listener appearing to be bored, looking at the watch, disappointed, upset, or confused? And if so, stop again incrementally, check it out, and stop the charge. Also note that sometimes we're talking at too high a level or too low a level. In both situations, we're wasting our time and the listener's time. Remember the phonograph record. Pick the needle up and move it to where your listener needs you to be. Let's go back to the Net.net internet company and listen as Bob, the charging rhino in our earlier vignettes, once again finds himself on the move.
Hey, Janet. Great new fax machine, huh? Yeah, this is a real beauty. You know, this has a memory of up to 100 pages in storage, and it'll continue to dial out even though it gets a busy signal. It'll continue to dial out until it goes through.
Yeah, they have one just like it
over... You know, one of the things you need to be careful about is to make sure that the pages are in upside down, and then put them in, and then dial out.
Uh-huh.
But you don't have to dial 9 to get an outside line like we do over here at the desks.
What's her problem?
Wait a minute. I'm charging again.
So, Janet, you know about this machine?
Yeah, I do. It is different than the old model.
But you know how to operate this particular model?
Actually, they have one just like it over in purchasing, and I was able to figure that one out.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Well, if you have any questions...
No, got it under control.
Okay, good. Do you know about the status page?
Yeah, just push the menu button here.
That's right.
But if I have any questions.
Good.
And Bob, thanks for not charging through the whole long explanation. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, sure.
I appreciate it.
Oh, it's okay.
Okay.
Well, that's definitely an improvement. Bob's best intentions to help Janet at the fax machine are fully realized when he stops his charge and focuses in on Janet's real needs. He does 4 things to successfully stop his unconscious assault. Number 1, he assesses Janet's knowledge by asking, "Are you familiar with this kind of fax machine?" 2, he practices active listening by checking his understanding. 3, he monitors her nonverbal cues that tell him that she's under attack. And 4, he asks if she has questions. Bob has stopped his stampede by picking up that phonograph needle from the beginning of his record and moving it to where his listener, Janet, needs it to be. That's good communication. Now, old habits are hard to break. Good old helpful Bob couldn't resist one last try, but to his credit, he stopped his charge. Formulate your action plan for the next time you encounter this kind of behavior. If you are the target of the charge, how will you deal with it? Will you make sure that the rhino understands your needs and current level of understanding? Will you be prepared to clearly stop the charge, as we saw modeled in the vignette? If you find that you're the charging rhino, will you be able to stop yourself by tuning in to your listener's nonverbal cues? Will you assess their knowledge and experience and practice active listening? Take this opportunity to put your new knowledge to work for you.
So, to wrap up, obviously, we have a lot of work in front of us, and I'm going to need complete buy-in from everybody on this floor. Any questions? Good enough. That's it.
All right. What do you think?
As the meeting breaks up, Alice angrily closes her folder and storms out of the conference room. Dylan follows her, trying to figure out what's wrong.
Pretty bold new plan, don't you think?
Yeah.
It's gonna mean some long hours. At least at first.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're okay with everything?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Really, I am. I'm just fine.
During this entire encounter with Dylan, Alice's face and body language were clearly incongruent with her words to Dylan. Communication is not always delivered and received on the verbal level. Many times, as you've just witnessed, the signals get confused when you hear one thing and clearly see another. It's important to remember that we communicate face-to-face through three channels. Unlike the channels on your TV, these channels play at the same time. Channel 1 is the words we use, and the words we pick are important. You don't want to say, put the file in the drawer on the right, if you need the file in the drawer on the left. So clearly the words that we pick contribute to the message. We also need to remember, however, that there are two other channels. Channel 2 is the voice, or the vocal, and that, of course, is the rate of speech, the tone. We know that a high-pitched, angry, rapid tone may indicate a very different message than a soft, composed, quieter tone does. And if you have a dog, for example, you know that your dog often communicates from your vocal, even more than from your words. Of course, the dog may know some words, but with me, for example, with my dog, if I say to him, come here, he comes because he's going to get a kiss or a hug. Now, if he's pulling the garbage apart and scattering it throughout the house, I might then say, come here, and he runs away. Now, my words have remained the same. The words, come here, have not changed. What's changed, of course, is my vocal, and the dog knows that Mama's not happy. He doesn't want to come to me at that time. That's channel 2. That's the vocal, or the voice. The third channel, a critical but often forgotten one, is channel 3, and that is the nonverbal, or what's happening on the face and on the body. We've known for many years that the channel that carries the most emphasis by far is the nonverbal, channel 3. Yet often, when we're planning to sit down and have a confrontation, meaning simply and hopefully a positive, productive discussion, a face-to-face meeting, we often worry a lot about the words we're going to use. We want very much to stay emotionally composed and keep a calm, composed voice, which we will learn about and talk about in sin number 9, emotional flooding. And often people will ask me, what should I do? I'm going to see my boss tomorrow and there might be a problem. I'm going to sit down with my friend and discuss something that's been bothering me. Here's what I'm going to say. And they'll tell me the words, and the words sound fine. And they'll say that they can keep a nice, calm, controlled, clear voice. The problem is we often forget or don't pay enough attention to channel 3, what's on the face and what's on the body. It's important to note that the message will be carried primarily through the nonverbal channel, or channel 3, which means that if there's an inconsistency, if, in other words, your words and your voice say one thing, but your nonverbal, channel 3, says something different, generally your listener, your receiver, will believe the nonverbal message. And this is how we get mixed signals without even realizing it. We get mixed signals, for example, when we say to someone, I really want to work this out. I really want to solve this problem. And we mean it, because even if we don't care for the person, we'd really like, instrumentally, to fix the issue and get rid of the conflict. If the words are positive and the voice is calm and positive, but the face says, you make me sick, understand, that is generally the message that will go out, and that is exactly opposite of what we want to go out. But often we think about what we're going to say. We worry about our voice, we worry about our words, but we don't think about what's on the face and what's on the body. One of my colleagues, his name is Tom, is a marriage counselor, and he does marriage weekends where couples go away for the weekend and they work on their respective issues, trying to make their relationships better. One of the exercises he does has the couple sitting down together. Each has several minutes to tell the other something that really bugs him or her about the other. The rules are that you can use negative, strong words, no abuse, but you can be pretty strong. These are critical issues here we're trying to get resolution on. Words can be negative. You can use a negative, strong voice tone. You can't scream and yell, but the voice can clearly be negative or angry. But the catch is that while doing the exercise, the couples, while using the negative words and negative voice, have to hold tightly and lovingly onto each other's hands, and they can't let go. And I watched as they did this exercise. I watched within a minute's time, the couple started laughing. They could not continue and finish the exercise. Why? Because it's impossible to use negative, argumentative, unhappy words and voice when the nonverbal message is, I love you, I care about you. Because what's happening is that the nonverbal, being the most powerful channel by far, often considered more powerful than the other two channels combined, wins. When there's a discrepancy or an inconsistency among those three channels, the nonverbal channel wins. The nonverbal is the one that wins. So what happens in that exercise is that the negative feelings give way to positive loving feelings. And the couples go from fighting at each other to fighting for each other, fighting for the relationship. Now, I'm not telling you to go to the workplace tomorrow and grab your boss's hands and start stroking them, but I do want you to know how important it is to remember consistency. If one of those channels is out of whack, is not consistent, your listener, your receiver, is going to believe what the nonverbal channel is conveying. That's why if someone else is giving you inconsistent or out-of-sync messages, as the listener, as the receiver, it's critical that you clarify or check out, investigate those out-of-sync or mixed messages. Otherwise, you walk away from that discussion, that meeting, that conversation, unclear as to what the real message was, and therefore, you can't respond effectively. Conflict or misunderstanding may occur. It's critical, in the moment, if you're getting words and voice and nonverbals that are not saying the same thing, it's critical to point out to the sender what the sender clearly doesn't know or is not practicing, and that is consistency among those three channels. So, for example, if someone is telling you that he or she is very happy with the job, there's no problem. He or she is looking forward to a good future. But the face is showing discomfort. The body is showing nervousness. There's distaste. There's anything that does not support the positive words and voice. It's critical as the listener to check out the misconception or the out-of-sync message that you're receiving. I'm glad you're telling me that you enjoy the job. I hear the good words. I'm glad that you're happy. I'm seeing a frown on your face, however, and doing that in a gentle, clear way, in a cooperative, non-threatening way, allows your sender to either be aware that there's a problem with the nonverbal, or, more importantly, to tell you the real message. It's critical that you check it out or investigate out-of-sync messages. To hear this in action, let's revisit the warehouse and listen to whether Dylan is able to sort out Alice's mixed messages.
So you think Taylor's plan is going to work?
Oh, yeah, it'll work fine.
And you're okay with everything he outlined?
Yeah, it seems like a good plan.
You know, Alice, I can't help but notice, but you seem pretty upset.
I'm not upset, really, I'm not.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad you're telling me that you're not upset and that you feel fine. Because, you have a real look of anger in your face.
No, I'm fine. Really, I am.
Alice, I hear you, but look at yourself. Your arms are clenched in front of you. You look like you're about ready to explode. How can I help you if you won't tell me what's going on?
Okay. It's Taylor, all right? I mean, the nerve of that guy, blaming all the late shipments on me and the guys on the loading docks. I mean, what nerve he has. We're not the ones who keep messing up all the orders, and we're not the ones who keep shifting around all the stock so that nobody can find it.
Dylan did a good job sorting out two incongruent messages, one from Alice's verbal channel and one from her nonverbal channel. But rather than ignore that, he challenged it. He politely but firmly told Alice that he heard one thing, but saw another on her face and body. And then he stayed with her and really listened to her, giving her a real chance to process her feelings. Okay, think about when you're the one sending mixed messages. What happens when you give out-of-sync or inconsistent messages? Is your message going to be received and understood clearly the way you want it to be? Obviously not, because it's out of sync. So how do you speak fluent body language? Well, of course, number one is the awareness. Awareness that our language is communicated face-to-face through three channels. The verbal, the words, number one. The vocal, or the voice, number two. And the nonverbal, the face and the body, number three. And being aware of that makes us more likely to think about not just what words to use or how to keep our voice nice and clear, but what the face and the body are conveying as well. Remember that if there is an inconsistency among those three channels, if one of those channels is out of sync or out of whack, generally the nonverbal, channel three, will be believed. And that's the channel that we need to make sure carries the message we're trying to convey. Let's return to the warehouse and see if Dylan is able to focus his awareness on his own mixed messages.
And that's just the initial stage. We're going to have to be really coordinated in order to pull off this switchover.
I think it's going to be great, though.
No, but this is going to be a lot of work. Why are you so tense? Wait a minute. I'm the one sending mixed messages this time.
I'll meet with you guys and we'll figure out the best one. We're going to have to be really coordinated in order to pull off this changeover.
Well, it's a little overwhelming at first, but we'll get behind it. I think it's going to make a huge difference down here.
Good.
Self-awareness goes a long way to ensure clear, consistent communication. Dylan quickly noticed his body language and fixed it to be consistent with his verbal message that said, "This is going to be great." He uncrossed his arms, he relaxed his forehead, and he paid attention to Taylor. Now he's given a congruent message with all three channels. Based on what you've now learned, how will you sort through mixed messages that may come your way? Will you check out your perceptions with the other person and ask for clarification in a gentle, non-threatening way? Will you be able to heighten your own awareness and make sure you are communicating honestly through all three channels of communication?
This concludes Side 5. The 9 Deadliest Sins of Communication will continue on Side 6 as Ronnie Moore investigates a very common workplace sin, sloppy communication. Thanks for listening.